We shall start even if we don't have... Yeah, excuses. I actually ate half of my breakfast so I could be here on time, so... Sorry?
Everyone else needs to commit more.
Yes. Okay. Front. Okay. It's broke. Okay, so let me remind you of the most important thing that we're going to use is the Cauchy residue theorem. And what it says is that if we have a curve C enclosing a region where a holomorphic function has some isolated singularities at points z1, z2, etc., then the contour integral over this closed loop of that function is given by 2 pi I, the sum of the residues of the function f of z at those singular points. Okay. And this is what we shall use to do some concrete integrals. This is where kind of the tire meets the road. So for our first example, is an example of a trigonometric integral. So consider the integral over the circle. Okay. You know, where A is greater than the B and they're both real. So using Cauchy's theorem is really using a trick. But in most of physics examples, we need to do some real integral, or most of the time, not always. But so using Cauchy's theorem is to kind of try to see if we can look at the integral that we're interested in as a restriction on, say, on a circle or a real line of a complex integral whose integrand has singularities whose residues we can calculate easily. So that is the philosophy. So, so we are going to extend this integral to the complex plane and just so in this case, it's actually very simple. We just have to make a variable transformation where we take z to be e to the power I theta. And then our d theta just becomes and then we use the fact that if you make this coordinate transformation, then cosine of theta can be given by this guy. So that this integral just becomes, the integrand just becomes 1 over sorry, a kind of a rational function. Actually, because there's a z here and there's a z here, it actually becomes a, the denominator is rational, the numerator is a constant. So if you plug all these in, you have so this is a quadratic expression, and this so we let's call this some polynomial p, and the zeros of this polynomial are the poles of your integrand, and the zeros are now, there are two zeros, and with the assumption that A is greater than B, we see that the first term, which is common to both zeros, that's actually has is less than one. Where since A is greater than B, this guy is positive. So A squared is greater than B. So and then if you compute what Z plus Z minus is, it turns out to be 1, which implies, right. So because this guy is less than minus 1, if you take the minus sign here, and so this is a positive number, that means that the modulus of the z minus is bigger than 1. What it is saying is that our integral is over the unit circle, and that z minus, you know, is outside the unit circle. And because you can verify this, it means that Z plus is less than 1, so it's inside somewhere on the unit circle. So the point of that is that, of this observation, is that we are interested in the residue of this function of the integrand at Z plus, not Z minus. Because according to Cauchy's theorem, the residue from inside the contour is what will, you know, contribute. Okay? So what is the residue? So we take the limit where z goes to z plus, multiply the integrand by z minus z plus. And our integrand is minus 2i z minus z plus and z minus. And this gives us minus I b square root of a squared minus b squared. So according to the to Cauchy's residue theorem, the value of the integral is 2 pi I times this guy, so it's 2 pi b by square root of a squared minus b squared. Okay? So this is a very simple example, just to illustrate the point that somewhere here, that the poles that need to be looked at are the poles which are inside the contour. Yeah?
did the one on Zed go?
Oh, that got multi, that got canceled with this one over Zed.
Ah, right, yeah, sure. Yeah,
okay. So this is as, this is probably one of the simplest integrals. You can get really fancy. So one class of integrals that are very, very useful are integrals where you use a semicircular contour. And to do that, you know, let's first, I'll state a theorem. Suppose you have some holomorphic function f of z, which on some semicircular contour, which closes either on the upper half plane or the lower half plane, that is bounded. So suppose you have a contour like this, so a semicircle like this, and it has a radius r, or on the lower half plane, you know, centered around the origin. So we are assuming that the point here, z, are parametrized like so. So, so then, you know, there are lots of there are these fun inequalities that involving complex numbers that I really didn't get time to get into, but using those inequalities and some arguments, so let's call this gamma. You can, the theorem states that the mod of the integral over this is bounded by that constant m pi by r to the power k minus 1. And if k is greater than 1, then okay, let's, you know, and then this thing, okay, let's call this, I don't know, let's call this I. Then I goes to 0 as r goes to infinity. So let's look at an application of this. So for an application, let's consider, suppose we are given this integral. So now it's not on the circle, but on the positive real axis. Now, because this is a this is an even function, you know, this can be evaluated. This is just the half of the so to do this integral, we have to actually do this integral. And this integral can be interpreted because we'll see that the integrand satisfies this condition. So if we can replace that integral by a complex integral where it goes along the real axis and closes on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. And then we take the radius to infinity, then the contribution to the integral from the semicircular bit will go to zero. And the what will survive is just the part that we're interested in. But the integral that involves this part plus the semicircular bit is equal to 2 pi I times the residues of this function inside this region. Okay, let's get to the, let's do the detail, because it's a very, if you haven't done much contour integral, this is an instructive example. Okay, so our integrand is, the integrand we are interested in is, okay, let's just spend 10 more seconds and write this. Okay, so our integrand is that we are interested in, okay, too many I's. So where are the poles of this guy? Right. Awesome. So the poles are at plus minus IA and plus minus IB. And let's assume for the time being that A and B are not equal. So this is probably IA and this is IB. Right, so let's go to this guy. So in the limit where R goes to infinity, now our integral, so we have to take this limit, and I'll come to that in a second. So let's call this whole contour gamma. So by the way, tomorrow is Saturday. This is probably your first Saturday in Kitchener-Waterloo as a group. So if you guys are interested, you should go and check out the Kitchener Farmers Market, which runs from early in the morning until 1 or 2-ish. And it's a really nice local market, you know, so that you can get acquainted with the local life here. So just take the bus 7 all the way down to Kitchener. Okay. Just a suggestion.
Is that every Saturday?
It's every Saturday. So there's a bigger, more touristy market in St. Jacobs. St. Jacobs is a town. Well, the St. Jacobs is a town nearby, but the St. Jacobs Farmers Market is actually in Waterloo. And you can get to that also using buses and a combination of buses and the train. The train will set you back about $14 or something. So you probably want to take the bus,
yeah,
which is free for you with the Watt card. And but I like the Kitchener Farmers Market because it's a more sort of, it's not touristy, but it's very nice. And, you know, just there's a nice cafe nearby called the Yeti Cafe. So, you know, like the right across, you know, they've got great food, coffee, you know. It's a really nice sort of little area, you know. It's like, so, you know, Kitchener-Waterloo is not all physics, you know. There are other things, more interesting things. Anyway, just a suggestion. Now, going back to my, so this guy, okay, now, one of the things that this theorem only applies when we take our semicircular contour to be centered around the origin, and when we take the limit in a way that, you know, both sides, the value of r goes to infinity. If we didn't do that, we could actually get any value for this integral. So, and so I guess this particular way of taking the limit is known as the taking the Cauchy principal value of the integral. So anyway, that's a kind of a side note. So our integral is half times 2 pi I. So I'm applying the Cauchy theorem here. Limit of z going to plus IA. And here, that means it eliminates one of the factors coming from here. And the limit, and we also have to include the other pole, the plus IB pole. And so there, z goes to plus IB. And and if you do all these substitutions, you end up with pi by 2 AB divided by A plus B. So the integral is, so that's the value. Now, this was computed assuming that A and B are not the same number, real number. If A and B, in case A was equal to B, then of course, what would be the result, right? It would be a multiple pole. So it just, what I'm trying to kind of get at is, if I take the limit A going to B, then this would be 2A, then we would get 4A cubed, pi by 4A cubed. And that's actually the same result you would get by doing the, if you calculate the multiple pole. So let me just remind you how to calculate the residue of a higher order pole. So our result would be half 2 pi I, and then the limit, we would have to take the limit where z goes to plus of I A. Squared, and then, messed up. So d by dz, z minus ia times and then you'd have to just do the, so that's a formal way of doing the integral. So, and that gives you, according to my notes, pi by 4a cubed. Okay.
Well, that's good then, that's the same.
Yeah. You mean this method?
Yeah, I mean, if there were multiple residues, then if the results are the same, I mean, if they will be same everywhere, then we could actually, I mean, take them as different residues and then calculate.
Right, I mean, so I don't want to, there might be something going wrong here, which it doesn't go wrong here, but in other example, there might be something funky happening, so, you know. Probably by some continuity argument, it works, but. Okay, so this is the easy, a very easy example of an application. Let's look at some other applications. Okay, this goes up. Sorry?
You have to multiply z minus ia whole square.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Damn it. That was a typo with a very large carbon footprint. Okay, so so in this case, you know, we went, we closed our contour on the upper half plane, but nothing would have changed. The results would not have changed if we closed the contour in the lower half plane. You know, but there are cases where you're forced to choose either the upper half plane or the lower half plane. And that's a case that you'll see when you're doing quantum field theory and solving for the Feynman propagator, where yeah, but whether you so that's a combination of something that I'll get to, but whether you close on the upper half plane or the lower half plane depends on the time, the sign of the time coordinate, right? So actually, I'll try to put that in the tutorial today as a as an optional question that you can mull over in your own time. Yeah.
At the outset here, I mean, when you're giving this integral to solve, how do I understand that this is an integral which involves a semicircle contour, either in the contour?
Experience, or just you try to look up similar integrals and you say, ah, this is an example. Does that example, you know, fit? Is it the same case? It's really just an algorithm, I think. Yeah. There is no algorithm. Or you can ask Mathematica. Mathematica, I'm sure, has figured it out. I mean, these integrals, of course, Mathematica can do them in its sleep, in, or as Pedro would say, in her sleep. Okay, so sometimes we want to do integrals like this. So we can consider this integral as the imaginary part of an integral over the real line, but with complex argument. So we consider the integral right. Okay. So this can be seen as the imaginary part of this guy because of the sign. Sorry, I just wrote the same expression three times. So now the question is whether we want to close the semicircular contour in the upper half plane or the lower half plane for this guy. What do you think? What is the difference between, major difference between, say, this sort of integral and the integrals that we have done before? There is an, in the numerator, there's this e to the power I of z, right? Which we can write as e to the power I x times e to the power minus y, right? Or we could have converted it into the polar coordinates, and then there would be, in polar coordinates, there would be e to the power I cosine of theta, right? That's actually better. And then here, e to the power minus r sine of theta, right? Now, if you look at this guy, this is an oscillatory term. So, you know, it doesn't matter how large r is, this guy is just going to oscillate. Whereas this guy, for large r, is either going to blow up or going to go to zero. But whether this guy blows up or goes to zero depends on the sine of the sine. And we know that in the upper half plane, sine of theta is positive. And therefore, if we close our contour in the upper half plane, the contribution from this thing, from that part of the integral, semicircular bit, will go to zero as you take the radius of that semicircle to infinity. Whereas if you had closed it on the lower half plane, this thing would be negative, so the argument of this exponential would be positive, and as you take r go to infinity, it would blow up, and the contribution from the semicircular bit from the lower half plane will not go to zero, and that is, our integral will not reduce to, the real part of that integral will not reduce to this, right? So hence, the contour we have to choose is the one that closes on the upper half plane. And, right. And there are two residues, one in the upper half, here and here, and you know, the singularity is r minus half plus minus square root of 3 by 2 I, and And if you do the, if you compute the residue of the relevant singularity, at the relevant singularity, you get this nice expression. All right. The next, sometimes you come across integrals that real integrals that when you want to extend it to the, yes?
What, the denominator of the integral that we just did, how fast is it, how large does it need to be?
Right.
I think it has to be bigger than Z. Like it has to be half out of 2, right? So half out of 1.
I vaguely remember that, but it's not clear from the arc to me.
It's from that
Right, I think it's the same condition as over there. Except that, you know, having this exponential numerator will just encourage it even more. It'll make it go faster even. Zero.
Yeah.
So, but no, I see what you mean. That, so does that mean that it can actually be even less?
Yeah, that was my question.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I think there's a quote. Yeah. Hang on, is there another example? There might be an example in that problem sheet today. No, good, I don't know. So sometimes you're trying to extend this, your real integral to the complex integral, and then you come across a pole on the real line. And that's something that happens, say, for example, when you're calculating the Feynman propagator. And so when you do the Feynman propagator, there are two poles, and there's a prescription where you go like this. What Feynman did was that he pushed the poles onto the complex plane. And the next theorem that I'm going to show you kind of justifies why, you know, that can be done. So the contours where you have to go around is, so let's come back to this because that's what we're going to do. Contours where you have to go around a singularity on the real axis are known as, I love this name, mouse hole contours. And if you're able to solve an integral using a mouse hole contour, you get a piece of Swiss cheese as a prize. So the theorem is something like this. Suppose you have a contour like this around, say, let's take the origin, and that's epsilon. Epsilon is the is the radius of the. Okay, sorry, I messed up. Let me draw this again. So here we have the real axis, and here we have the origin, where there is a singularity, and this is an epsilon, and there's a semicircle, an arc, really. Which starts at an angle alpha and ends at an angle beta. In my notes, there's a typo. I said this is beta, but that's not true. So, and suppose that the function that we're looking at has a residue, so f of z, you know, has its residue let's call this point A. At that point, A is sigma. So it has residue sigma at z equals to A. All right. So this arc, let's parameterize that by A plus epsilon e to the power I t, where t goes, it is bounded by beta and alpha. Then the statement is that, okay, I'm just going to erase this so I can have more space on the same board. So these are the kind of things that they tell you you shouldn't do while you're teaching. It's like, you know, because English is a language you wrote right from left to right, right? You shouldn't go the other way. Anyway. So then you take the limit. In the limit, epsilon going to 0, the integral over f of z over this bit, the arc, is given by beta minus alpha times I sigma. So that is the theorem. And it's very easy to prove. It's one-line proof. So f of z has a singularity, a simple pole. So f of z has a simple pole at z equals to a. So let's just define g of z, which is f of z with the pole subtracted. With the residue at the weighted by the residue. So then g of z is no longer singular at that point. And right. So g of z is holomorphic in that region. Right. And now if I now plug into this plug f of z into this you know, into this integral, what we get is that the contribution from g of z goes to 0, and we just have to do a very simple integral involving this, and then we get the desired result.
This is given that f of z has a simple pole.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do an example. It's a kind of a well, it's pretty simple actually. So we want to do this integral 0 to infinity x minus sine of x divided by x cubed d of x, which obviously is singular at this is a real integral at this point. Now, because both the numerator and the denominator are odd functions, so this guy is actually an even function. So, you know, instead we can consider this. So what complex function can we think about that will actually give me this integral? Now consider the function f of z I times z minus e to the power I of z divided by z cubed. Okay, now if I take the imaginary part of f of z, then the imaginary part of f of z on the real line coincides with our integrand. Okay. So just take a moment to think about it. Because the imaginary part of f of z will actually involve both x and y.
Yeah.
But you're looking at it on the real line. Okay. Yeah. However, this guy has a triple pole at z equals to zero. And to see that, you can just make, you know, so let's just do an expansion. And in the expansion, it's something like and stuff cancel out. So this term is the pole term. Is the triple pole term. But the second term is a 1 over z term. That's a simple pole. So we can't, like as it is, we can't really apply our theorem, Mausol contour theorem, to this because the pole is not a simple pole. However, if we could somehow get rid of this first term, then we could use that theorem. So this is kind of an added complication. I probably should have looked at and come up with an example where this added complication was not there, but this kind of makes life a little more fun, right? So what if we consider instead this function, which is our original function f of z with the triple pole subtracted.
Fact that we're only taking the imaginary part, and so we can kind of chuck off that minus one anyway. Like the one over the yeah minus one over the z to the three bit.
Right. No. Yeah. No. I think because it's got a triple pole, you couldn't really use this theorem to. Okay. So. If you think about it a little bit, you'll see that, you know, in defining H, we have kept the imaginary part of the function when restricted to the real line unchanged. So that if we do the integral with this as our integrand, and then take the real part on the imaginary part on the real line, then we actually get the integral that we were looking for. So we can now apply our Mausol contour theorem to this guy, and we can get the result. Okay. So our contour will look something like this. Let's call this C1. let's call this, sorry, C3. This is C2. And then this is C4. So, and let's, this thing is R, and this thing is epsilon. So when we take R goes to infinity, the contribution from this part drops out. And then we also take epsilon going to zero, and then basically our integrand, our integral becomes the integral over C1 plus C2 is minus C3. So these guys will give me the imaginary part of those guys restricted to the real line will give me this thing, whereas this integral is evaluated using the mouse hole contour, and it's pi minus zero. These are the angles. Remember the angles that enter the mouse hole contour? Times I divided by 2. So here we are using the residue at this point. So this function has a residue of half at the origin, right? Because when we subtract this part, you know, this is the leading, this is the singular term. And this term has 1 over factorial of 2. So this is times 1 over z. So that is the residue. Okay. So doing all of this gymnastics, you know, when the dust settles, as I say, we get 0 to infinity x minus sine of x by x cubed d of x is pi by 4. Okay, I have a another integral, which is even more exotic, and that integral will involve logarithms. So, I've never actually come across, well, I guess in physics sometimes you do come across these things, but oh, by the way, today the complex analysis tutorial will be the second tutorial because David wanted to go first because I think he's going camping or something. Okay, so integrals involving logarithms. So You know, we went to quite a bit of length to avoid the fact that logarithms are multiple valued functions. But here, sometimes, the fact that they're multiple valued functions is useful in evaluating certain integrals. So sometimes integrals of the form where f of z has no singularity on the real, positive real axis can be evaluated by considering complex integrals of this form on a very special kind of contour known as keyhole integral, keyhole contours. So keyhole contours look something like this. So you have a small part of a circle here, which goes out right above the positive real axis like this, and right below the negative real axis like this. And then this goes like this, comes all the way around, goes, and then comes back and joins up. So I guess I should go this sense. And why is this so? So let's label these guys. Let's call this bit of the contour C3, this C2, and this C4, and the big almost circle bit C1. Okay. So the So how does this help us? So to see that it does, let's make the observation that if you looked at the part of the contour integral going along C2 and C4, then you know, as those contours approach the real line, and one part of the integral is this, so this is the integral going along C2. Is that C2? No, or no, C4. And and the integral going along C2 is now log of x plus 2 pi I. And that's because as we went around the circle once, to the log, because the log function has monodromy, it picked up a 2 pi I. And now if we exchange this, you know, if we change the limit, then the first term picks up a minus sign, which cancels this term. And therefore, we get minus 2 pi I 0 to infinity of f of x d of x. So so if our integrand is such that when we take the radius of the large circle to infinity and the radius of the small circle to zero, such that the contribution from those two parts go to zero, then we can use Cauchy's residue theorem to evaluate this integral over this keyhole contour. Yeah?
Log doesn't go to zero, so it goes to infinity. So what guarantee do we have that the u function is bounded?
So I mean, the log part kind of drops out, you know, because, you know, we are just using the log to keep, you know, this guy in the integral. You know, these are the two. So there are four parts in this integral, right? Four contours that make up. So we are assuming that our function is behaved in such a way that the other two. I see a point. The point is that log goes to infinity as you go off to infinity, but log goes to infinity in a very mild way. So if your integrand has some 1 over x squared or whatever x even, like, or something, that's going to go to 0 much faster than log. Okay. And same when, so it'll depend on your integrand. You know, and same for going to 0, because
yes.
You know, log also, you know, goes to infinity very, very mildly when you go to 0. So that's why physicists are not really scared of log singularities. Oh, it's a logarithmic divergence. With quadratic divergence, they start quaking in their pants. Okay. So let's do an example. And then we'll finish, and we all can be all happy. So I kind of found a very funky example in one of the books, and this always somehow creates a lot of controversy when I do this integral. Yeah, wouldn't it be fun if you, like, opened the newspaper in the morning and said, like, you know, mathematician, the headline was, like, mathematicians create controversy, you know, they're fighting over value of some integral or, you know, or a theorem, rather than wars and famines and stuff like that, you know? Like, physicists are really, like, you know, hashing it out about whether the vacuum is stable or unstable. Okay. That's the world I want to live in. Not where people are fighting. Okay, so suppose we want to compute this integral. So the integrand has has poles at the cube root of minus 1. So the cube root of minus 1 are minus 1, of course, as well as this guy. Right, so because the integrand has a pole on the negative real axis at minus 1, you know, we can probably use this one. And so we have to consider our integrand has to be something like log z, z cubed plus 1. Now, notice that when we, that the, on the unit circle, because our singularities are all on the unit circle, that on the unit circle, these equivalences hold, these equalities hold. So log of z is I of theta is I of theta, which is the argument of z. Therefore, the residues of our of this guy So the residues of, say, what do you call this, f? So the residues of f of z is going to be given by I arg of z divided by 3 of z squared evaluated at these three points. So this is kind of a, I'm pulling almost a fast one here. Yeah, I know that this is not a rational function, but we are, you know, but since at the residues the log of z doesn't do anything, you know, anything funky, or we can actually, when computing the, you know, the log of z, when computing the residues, we can use the same formula that we had for computing the residues of a rational function. This is just a trick. It's not, there's nothing deep here, you know, it's just to kind of save time. Okay. So then you can just plug these guys in and you get some strange looking numbers, and then you add them up and use the theorem, and you end up with okay, something like this. Okay, and that's all I have. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Okay, so today at 3:30. I cannot stay too long after tutorial. I can't, because I'm going climbing tonight around 5:30. So if any of you want to come and join, you know, let me know. I get one person a month who hasn't been there to come as a guest. They're membership, their first visit is waived, the fee for the visit, the day pass, but they have to rent a shoe and a harness. So it doesn't have to be today, but any of you, if any of you want to check out the climbing gym in Kitchener, let me know. Okay.
So you get every Friday or?
I go 2 to 3 times a week.
Okay.
So, you know, I try to go as if it was physically possible, I would have gone every day, but you know, it's not physically possible. So, yeah.
What if you're embarrassingly bad?
I was embarrassingly bad for almost like 3 months. Yeah, it's like, that's a great thing about climbing is that nobody cares. Nobody cares, and you're in your zone, and you know. It's like,
you're in your zone.
You see how the line falls.